Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. It is time to hear from Chiefs head coach Andy Reid. His press conferences are sponsored by Arvest Bank, making banking easier for customers for more than 60 years. Arvest Bank, proud to serve Chiefs Kingdom, and also by Blue Cross and Blue Shield. Discover the benefit of blue.
And that's half the battle. It's not how much you blitz. It's just how you utilize the blitzes and when you utilize them. So he's got a great feel for that.
Yeah, how did he get that touch for doing that? And I know you had to coach against him. I know it's been a while now, but you coached against him before. What's it like calling plays against his defenses?
Yeah, so it's obviously tough. I mean, he gives you a lot of different looks. Matt Nagy will tell you that when you talk to him. He more recently has gone against him. And so he's tough to go against with the different combinations that he has. So he does a heck of a job with it.
We'll go next to Sam McDowell. Sam?
Hey, Andy. Just a quick two-part question here, but the first half, I wonder if you could take us through the fourth and one play. First, the decision to go for it, and then also the execution of that play.
Yeah, I thought we did a good job with the execution. We've tried to stay aggressive on fourth down within reason throughout the season. But you know, that was the idea behind it. The execution of the play, I thought we blocked it well, which ends up being important. And then the ability of Kareem to kind of bounce off of things and his lateral cutting ability there.
Speaking of that, just wondered if you could – how have you just seen him embrace short yardage situations as a whole? I mean, I know that's been his reputation, but particularly this year, just how good he's been in short yardage for you.
Yeah, he's done a nice job for us. You know, Kareem is a big kid, and he's got a good low center of gravity, and he's got great vision and lateral cutting ability. So that fits in well with your short yardage game. There's usually, Sam, there's not a lot of space in there normally, and so for you to be able to squeeze through those tight holes, and he does a good job with it. He has a knack of being able to kind of cut his body in half sideways by going sideways and still moving forward.
You're listening to the Andy Reid press conference here on 96.5 The Fan, KFNZ FM and AM, HD1 and HD2 in Kansas City.
Considering you guys have, you know, film to watch from the first matchup, just what do you think your defensive players and Steve Spagnuolo may have learned from that first game that can be applicable to Sunday's rematch?
Yeah, so one of the things we'll keep working on is you've got to be able to get off the field on third downs. I mean, we keep stressing that. Steve does, and so we've got to you've got to be able to take care of those third downs, especially when you've worked so hard to put yourself in a good position. So and they do it. Listen, the Bills do a heck of a job with that. They're really a good, really good football team offensively.
We'll go next to Pete Sweeney. Pete?
Coach, Jalen Watson returned. It looked like you guys might have been limiting his snaps. How did he come out of the game? And you feel like you'll be able to kind of increase that as we go here?
Hey, I actually came out feeling good, Pete. I mean, it was that's one of the positives that you come out with Jalen. He's he was fresh from the injury, and you hope that he can not have the swelling that was taking place before, and still function at a relatively high speed during the game. And I thought he did that. I thought he sustained when given that opportunity.
We'll go next to Vahe Gregorian. Go ahead, Vahe.
Hey, Andy. I'll have a quick follow-up also, Kelsey. I know this is hard to quantify, but when you see Travis in the postseason, how much do you think it's a function of the adrenaline for the postseason and the rest? Or is it one more than the other? Is it both that have led to especially these last two postseason starts?
That's a good question. But I'm happy for him with the seven catches and all that. But I think more of it is just we've got a variety of guys around him. I mean, he's the opportunities that he's had, he's done well with, and I don't think it's his play that has been reduced. You know, everybody asks about age, by age or physical ability or anything. I just think that you've got a variety of guys that we've been able to use around him. And when we didn't, then teams were ganging up on him. So it's a good problem now because guys are healthy and we've got choices out there and they can't really just focus on him.
And the follow-up, Andy, is I know you're big on the guys who are energy givers, and I assume Travis is one of the biggest of the energy givers. But I wonder if you could just describe how infectious that is and how it resonates with his teammates.
Yeah, but it's not only his energy; it's a positive. It's that positive mindset that you can do anything. And I think he does a great job of that, and being able to show it to the guys that, listen, we come together the right way, anything's possible. So that's the thing I appreciate him the most. I also appreciate that at his age, he goes out there every day and practices hard. I mean, that just, and if you try to take him out, he gets mad at you. So I think that's a special thing, for an older player.
We'll go next to Matt Derrick. Go ahead, Matt.
Hey, Coach, I have a quick housekeeping question and a second question, Kelsey. But Coach, on McColl, his practice window closes this week. Do you expect that, you know, is there a possibility that maybe he'll end the season on IR, or would you like to get him activated this week?
Yeah, we'll see how that goes here. Just I haven't made any decisions on that yet, Matt. So, but, you know, he's worked hard to try to get himself back and get going. But we'll see how that works out.
And I'm curious on just your additional watch, you know, what you thought about the offensive line play on Saturday and especially the left tackle spot.
Yeah, first I'd give credit to the Texans. I mean, that defense is a good defense, real good defense. And that defensive line is a big challenge, as it will be this week. This defensive line, likewise, is a big challenge. So, but I thought our guys held up well against them. And we did some good things in the run game and did some good things in our play pass game. So we were decent on third down. So I think all around it was good against who we were playing against.
We'll go next to Nick Jacobs. Nick?
And Kelsey, I'll have a follow-up if I can, please. Andy, from 2017 when Kareem was a rookie until now, what ways have you seen him grow as a player? And how much do you appreciate that he's getting this moment and this opportunity?
Yeah, Nick, I mean, he's able to speak up now because he's been there. He's got that senior leadership thing going. And so as much of an energy giver as we were just talking about Trav, Kareem does the same thing. He brings it a little different way, but he brings it, that toughness, that want to. You get he and Pacheco out there, I mean, that's there's a whole lot of energy coming off of those two. So and that's appreciated. But that's probably where I'd tell you he doesn't feel like the young guy on the team anymore. He's the veteran guy. And he knows guys will listen to him, and he can help set a tempo, all those things, Nick, that comes with being a veteran.
And then for like DeAndre, Hollywood, Kareem, and some of those rookies, what does it mean to you as a coach to kind of give them this moment to where they do get to play in an AFC championship game, and no matter what happens, they have that on their bucket list checked off type of thing?
Yeah, Nick, that's kind of a neat deal. DeAndre, I mean, he's been doing it 12 years, and so – I said, hey, you never been to this one, have you? And he said, no. But and against a good, we're able to go against a real good football team here. And so that competition level will be at its highest point. That's why we're all in this thing. So for him to have that opportunity to experience that part, as great as he is, to even be able to have to take it up one more notch, is something that'll be new for him. So that's I think that's a great thing for the young guys. It'll be a good experience for them going forward, and they can learn from it. And we'll tell them what it's all about. The players will tell them what it's all about. But until you get out there and feel that energy, you really don't know. But it'll be good for them to get through it.
We have two more for you, Coach. We'll go first to Todd Lebo. Todd?
Coach, on that front, this round of the playoffs, you know, the Bills are their second chance to try to get you guys in this round. You didn't get through right away at Philadelphia. What is it about this round? I know you're playing a good team, but is there anything else about this round that is special over the others?
Yeah, well, the fact that we're at home is a real positive, I think. We've got to play well. I know, whether we're favored or not favored, I don't know. I presume they'll probably be favored, but that's all right. We do our thing as we go into this, and we don't worry about all that noise. So, but it's a high level of football, and you've got to handle it that way. You know, I mean, you get to test yourself and close to the highest level. Besides Super Bowl, this is the highest level. So I think that's kind of what it's all about for coaches and players.
We have one last one for you, Coach. We'll go to Seren Petro. Seren?
Thank you, and I'll have a follow-up too, Kelsey. Coach, first of all, your pass rush obviously was great. George had a big day just all around, and it's really stepped up coming down the stretch. How much of that is just maybe Charles Omenihu, you know, having the depth of rushers, or is it schematically that Spags did something differently? Because you really kind of struggled compared to where you were last year early on. Now, you know, you're playing your best when it comes to getting after the quarterback.
Yeah, sure. Now, Spags done a good job. We talked about that. The players also have to step up, and that's what the guys have done a nice job with. I'm so proud of them for that. Joe Cullen does a heck of a job with that defensive line, and George had a big day, just being as relentless as he is and how much work he puts into the game and making sure he's physically right and so on. It's a real tribute to him and his effort. And then Charles, it's been great to have Charles in there. I don't think you're missing a point there at all. He's a good passer. He's a good football player. So that helps a lot to have him in there. And Chris Jones, likewise. And Mike, who doesn't get any get any of the glory, he's a good football player too. So he kind of does the dirty work. So doesn't get much praise for it.
And then finally, Coach, we hear a lot about like the middle eight, you know, last 4 minutes of the first half, first 4 minutes of the second half. I mean, the Texans really got a dream scenario. They basically had the ball for 15 minutes of game time there. I'm just, you know, on the offensive side, you guys, a lot of times that could seemingly, you know, make you cold, rusty at halftime. And then I think it was maybe more than an hour before the offense really got to go out there and execute. Yet you came out and went down the field. What are you doing during all that time? What do you do to keep everybody focused, sharp, and make sure that, you know, the Texans aren't, you know, basically icing your offense?
Yeah. It was a pretty cold day too. That well-used words there. So, the guys, they stay focused and they have a purpose coming out that second half, which is important. That's something that we've worked on here this season. We weren't very good at that the beginning of the season, and we tried to really focus in on that. Whether that's staying warm and loose and all that, that's also part of it. But staying in tune with the game, I think, is big. And yeah, the 15 play drives and 14 play drives back to back used up a lot of time for both teams. So, I'm glad we were able to put it together. I appreciate the focus of that went into it, I guess, to answer your question. And that covers a lot of space when you use that word, but the guys, they kept themselves ready to go.
Coach, that's all we have for you.
All right, so that was Andy Reid right here on your home for the Chiefs, 96.5 The Fan. This is Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. Here in about 15 minutes, we'll get to, of course, what is louder than ever, which is these crazy conspiracy theories around the Chiefs in the NFL.
A lot is that of the whining. Word you're looking for,
crybabies? Well, yeah, it's something we've discussed on the show before this week, but now I think we've officially, you know, we had maybe the, a lot of times, like when you have a disease, you know, you wait for the main medicine, then you got the generic or whatever. Like CDS is officially what we have in Chiefs derangement syndrome that's out there across the league, and I don't know what the cure is at this point in time. Someone's got to do
somebody else winning, I guess. A bad call against Kansas City, those have never happened.
We'll get to that a little bit, but what Andy said about even Buffalo I thought was interesting. It sounds kind of obvious, but he said, hey, what did we learn? He was asked, what did you learn maybe from playing Buffalo in week 11? And he said, hey, we got to get them off the field on third down. I went back and looked. The Bills were 9 of 15 on third down.
And several third and longs, which has been kind of the theme of the NFL playoffs in general.
Right. And the Chiefs at times this year struggled on third down defensively anyway. But the Bills were 9 of 15 in that game. The Chiefs had the two turnovers, as we already brought up. It's pretty obvious. Yeah, like if the Bills go 9 of 15 again on third down, that's a big problem on Sunday night at Arrowhead.
The problem is if they get to third and three or less, it's a lock in my opinion. They've proven a willingness to be aggressive because all they got to do is get 1 to 2 yards to make it fourth and one or two. And if it's Josh Allen in fourth or one or two, that's 100% conversion rate or 98% conversion rate, which means they're going to go for it, which always boils down to the same thing. Can you stop the run on first or second down, or can you stop it from being third and three? If it's third and three, third and four, they'll go 9 and 15 on third down again, and they'll run into the exact same problem they did before. That game's funny because it was the Chiefs were up by 14-13. Then the Bills took the lead back pretty quick, 16-14. Then it was like a fourth quarter touchdown that stretched it out. Kansas City immediately got it back within two, and it seemed like they might have a chance. And they got the Bills back in some like third and mediums, only to make it fourth and short, only to have Josh Allen have a super long fourth down run that iced the game. And so it's easier said than done, especially in the postseason. Like you look back to last night's game, in my opinion, the Ravens or whatever, when they know they got four downs to work with, the Bills are a really tough team to slow down when they know they got four, and fourth and one or two is going to be a goal.
There's
for
an
them,
advantage when
a
you,
huge chance.
There's a massive huge advantage when you know, like your OC has the backing of your head coach to go for it, and therefore you can call your third downs differently. You hit on it, Cody. I mean, it's the Bills have done it. The teams that are alive in the NFC. I mean, the Lions got all the pub all year. Like Dan Campbell,
Washington was incredibly aggressive.
That's
in that
what's
game.
Funny is like they got going back to that game for a second. Yeah, the Commanders got beat the Lions at their own game. I mean, Dan Campbell got all the credit all year for being ultra aggressive and like, oh my gosh, he's a football guy and he's as aggressive as anybody and all this. Dan Quinn basically did what Dan Campbell's done all year, and it worked for them. It's a big reason why they won that football game. It's why Dan Quinn ultimately beat the Bucks the week before as well. That's who they are. They're very, you want to call it luck factor or whatever, but no, they go for all these fourth downs. It pays off, and they also have been so good in terms of not turning the ball over and the bounce going their way.
If you go back and look at that game against Kansas City, and I know we'll talk more about the issues with the refs and all that stuff in a minute. Mm-hmm. The easiest thing to know is that, like every other playoff game, who controlled the offense and defensive line? Okay, well, on the defensive line, that was against the offensive line of the Texans. Fairly obvious who controlled that matchup. There were 8 sacks in the game. On the opposite end, I will say, and Andy Reid is right here, the first half of the game, one thing that did stand out, and I think we had mentioned in the show maybe later last week, is that I still probably undersold the Texans' defense a little bit because they were fast. They were on the ball quickly. They do have multiple players that seemingly can gum things up kind of immediately. They still had a good pass rush, and Will Anderson absolutely torched Joe Tooney on a snap, and it kind of looked rough. But I think it's correctly pointed out by Mina Kimes, who's been on the show a couple of times, it did look like one thing Andy did defensively or offensively that was smart against their defenses, he just avoided Singly. He's like, you know what? I don't care. I'll throw it somewhere else. If he's going to be on the field, I'm going the opposite of him. And they did quick motion, and they did quick passes. And that game came down to 7 possessions for Kansas City, 5 of which they scored on. But they had to settle for some field goals because of the red zone stuff and everything else in between. I came out of that game once again realizing the Chiefs can win in several different ways. And I can't say that about every team in the league. The Chiefs can win in four or five different ways a lot of weeks. I don't know that against the Bills. Maybe it's two or three. But against the Texans, they could have won 10 different ways.
Right.
And still came out with the victory.
That's something that goes all the way back, I mean, last year, really. But even I remember after the Baltimore and Cincinnati games, the first 2 weeks of the season, we said it's, you know, we joke because you have your poker games at your house. And I was like, it's kind of like that, man. There's more outs. You poker and talk about outs and everything like that. Yeah. There's more outs for the Chiefs. They have more ways to win and have an out to win that hand, to win that game, to win that snap than anybody else in the NFL, whether you want to call it the Chiefs being inevitable and all that kind of stuff, fine. But yeah, I'm 100% with you. But that's just what they've been able to do. And as people on the text line have pointed out, you know, the Chiefs almost were like a bend but don't break defense at times in the game. Because the Texans got the ball to the 50, and then they kind of hit a brick wall, it seemed like, once they got to the 50-yard line or so, for a variety of reasons.
And then because of their kicking trouble, that's a whole nother part of why they couldn't get points on the board. What the hell happened there? Their special teams coach, is he the guy who catches the arrow this morning? Somebody always gets fired after a postseason run.
He got shoved by his own player at one play into the game after the kickoff.
Not
player
just
went nuts.
That was a particularly aggressive shove, we agree, right?
It was, yeah.
I've seen plenty of shoving on an NFL sideline. That was
emotions.
That was a shove.
We've all seen emotions, hey, your competition. But that was the first play of the game, man. Like, one play in and you're already shoving your coach. We've all seen it later in the game. Heck, we saw in the Super Bowl last year, Travis Kelce with Coach Reed there and everything. Like, it happens. But for it to be on the opening kickoff to be shoving your special teams, like, you're already a little too wired up.
Out of curiosity, maybe somebody who's listening to the show has worked for the NFL can answer this. Because it's a sport, maybe it works different. If I shoved Alex like that, everyone's got to go to HR and answer questions about what happened.
That's true.
Drew's got to answer questions. If that happens, because you're not still allowed, just because they tackle each other doesn't mean you're allowed to assault a fellow member of the workforce. Do they have to go to HR?
No.
Do they have to answer a football setting? Do you have to go
to the HR department and answer questions
about this assault?
It happened on a football field. It's different.
You can't just sign away. You don't have to have a meeting?
No. I think it's, Cody, so if it happened in a team facility, like it was just during the week, you know, and it wasn't a playoffs or whatever, maybe they fine a player or something like that. But in a game, yeah, they can get away with more. It's not the same workplace as you and I.
What if it's like a front office member instead of a coach? It's like Brett Veach, you know?
There might be a fine, but
You don't think there's an HR meeting?
No.
You don't think there's like an anger, you know, the classic HR
meeting. You know what
they
do in the NFL? If you're a crappy player, they cut your ass the next week. That's what they do. They say you're gone. So it does happen.
Need an HR meeting.
You know? It's a little bit different.
Cody, it's a sport where people use their heads to basically try to hurt other people.
But I don't think that just eliminates, you know, like just because I'm a construction worker working with doesn't mean I'm allowed to not have like OSHA. Like I'm still allowed some workplace protections. I'm just saying.
Sure, sure.
That's why I'm asking.
Yes, I mean, you're correct. If the special teams coordinator wants to be blackballed from the league and actually say that he needs to,
then
he can do that.
I was asking if it was mandatory. I'm not suggesting anyone ever actually calls the meeting. I'm asking if you're the HR professional at the Buffalo Bills building, do you have to sit them down for a mandatory meeting to discuss workplace conflict? Conflict resolution.
Yeah, I
just think it'd be really funny. It's kind of like it's an interesting way to look about
someone
it.
Someone said, HR, you shove me and you better duck, Cody. Dang.
Drew, what would you do if Cody just shoved me randomly during the show? Like we got into a heated argument and he just shoved me. What would you do?
I don't know if I would say anything because I'd be too in shock.
He'd get us back right away.
Would you go run to Spec? Like, what do I do?
Drew Tattle, he just
shove. No, what if there were punches thrown?
He's out the door to Speck.
I'm not going to name it in all seriousness. Not going to name any names. I know at one point, within the last 10 years, there was actually maybe an issue in the building.
Yeah,
a fist fight.
Yeah, no, there was a suspension for a day or two over.
So yeah, there's your answer.
I would say like if it wasn't, it might have been a full fist fight.
I wasn't here. I wasn't here at the time.
It was seemingly escalating.
This predates Cody and I's show.
If you full on shoved Gold, I'd be like, all right. I try to calm things up. But if you start throwing punches, okay, yes, I'm going to spec after that. If I see a punch thrown, sorry about it. You did it to yourself.
Football, the locker room, the field, it's just it's not that you can't compare it to your workplace. So, no. It's a bad look for the player and the Texans. Obviously, you can't be doing that. But, no, nothing's going to happen from that.
I'm not going to snitch off of one shove. Like, look, like, relax. Like, you guys have gotten into it about a couple of things since I've been here. It never, of course, has escalated to that. If it got into a shoving match, I would be surprised, first and foremost.
All right, coming up next, we're going to talk about CDS. That's Chiefs Derangement Syndrome, and more people are infected by it than ever before.
Kansas City a bit confused on defense, trying to switch things up with an extra defensive back. Third down and 8 for Stroud. Pushed. Chased by Chris Jones. Spun to the ground by Chris Jones. He corkscrews him into the ground at his own 40-yard line. It's a loss of 14 yards on a sack by Chris Jones.
Mitch Holthus on the call right here on your home for the Chiefs, 96.5 The Fan. It was interesting. Mitch mentioned right before the play, the Chiefs had some confusion in the secondary. Somebody ran on late, and yet it ended up still getting a sack on that play. One of 8 sacks for the Chiefs defense. Coming up in about 15 minutes, we'll get to the random question of the day. I don't have to tell you guys. You guys know it's worse now than ever before, and that is the referee conspiracy theories that were once just like fringe opposing fans. That was it. You're like, okay, embrace the hate, move on. It's reached a level where now you have people that I actually think are fairly intelligent in the media nationally that are now not just going with the, well, there's a few favorable calls, going the full-fledged, the refs are in it, the league's in it, it's all rigged kind of thing. It's crazy, and it's why we've been calling it long before this weekend, but it's just now everybody's calling it the same thing. CDS, Chiefs Derangement Syndrome, is a very, very real thing, and it has caught on all across the country. It does start, as we said, with the first symptom of whining and that your team has to lose to Patrick Mahomes, and then it's just exploded from there. It's just, we know that Tom Brady, Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, LeBron James, of course, I'm not saying that some quarterbacks don't have some calls go in their direction. We've acknowledged that. We've acknowledged
that. I'd say
that's
just a general part of sports.
Bad calls happen. We've acknowledged that. There was some bad calls in the Chiefs-Texans game. That's true. But it has now just gone overboard to the point where there's truly people out there, and it's, don't tell me it's a small fraction anymore. It's not. It's a it's a good chunk of the sports media and fans outside of Kansas City that truly believe that the league and that the refs have somehow conspired to make sure the Chiefs are winning games. That's how crazy this thing has gotten, Cody.
I guess what stands out, there's two things that really stand out about it. One is the number of people I respected as what I deemed intelligent football people who knew ball getting in on this. And I'm like, are you nuts? You're spewing this nonsense? And seemingly like a whole group of people who made the biggest play, the one that didn't even get a foul call. So like
the flop out of bounds.
Yeah,
right.
which is crazy.
There's no flag.
There was no flag. They didn't call the penalty. The play continued as normal. So that part really, but like people I genuinely think understand and know football. Now I'll tell you, Skip Bayless is on your side. Wow. And Skip Bayless is on your side. I would not recommend that the side to be on. If you have aligned yourself with Skip, think about what that says about you, not about the normal associate of people that exist inside of this world. This idea somehow that like the Chiefs are all in on the fix together with the referees. Like refereeing hasn't been bad this whole time.
And that's the thing, Cody. Bad. That was why we now it's funny to just point out any other game that has bad calls, because we've all known that officials should be full-time. It's a problem. Officiating is bad in the NFL. And yes, it is a very hard job. But the point is, bad calls happen every single game. The ones in Chiefs games get talked about, one, because the narrative is now set by everybody.
And because they're on TV.
And they're on TV. They're in prime games, prime time games. They're also in games that mean the most. And you know what? When there's a call that might break their way, that's fine. They take advantage of it. They unlike other teams that get a break, if some team doesn't take advantage of it, nobody cares. Nobody cares if, I used the example earlier, the Jags get a break in their game because nobody's watching the four-win Jacksonville
Jaguars.
They can get a
phantom call for a roughing the passer. And by the way, the roughing the passer calls went uncalled, so they called it correctly, right? 2 correct calls, 1 wrong call. They called the non-call on the flop correctly. They called the helmet-to-helmet, which it was, on the first one correctly. Even if it was borderline, it was correct. And they called the second one wrong. It was 2 Texans defenders who clapped helmets, not the other. They also could have stopped him the remaining 60 yards on that drive.
Yeah, if you want to argue that calls are not consistent, I'm with you. Yeah, they're not consistent across the league. Week to week, we're all on the same page. What has driven me crazy to the point where now it just pisses me off, and that's why like I've just decided now to just go completely overboard and troll on social media about it
is because
the conspiracy aspect of it is like there are actual numbers and facts I'm sure a lot of you have seen
that Mahomes is actually less likely
that
to get
show
a call.
That these conspiracy theories are just flat out wrong, right? And it doesn't matter. You can show this to people, and I guess that goes with a lot of things in life nowadays, but it doesn't matter. People will still think they're correct, and they will still ignore reality, and that's what's happening. And the thing is, what we have to do, I guess, now in Kansas City and embrace is this is never ending. The narrative is set in stone now. There's no changing it. People have dug their heels in, and for the next decade, especially with the Chiefs going for a three-peat right now and maybe accomplishing that in 2 weeks or in 3 weeks, there's no going back. Like, this is how people are going to talk about your team forever, and the more they win, this is how I'm going to talk about it. But anybody suggesting that the Chiefs are only a dynasty because of the refs cheating, hilarious, considering a lot of the noise is coming out of New England, where their franchise was literally cheating. Like, fact, cheating.
Yes. Everybody knows that it's a case, but that's the thing. The Mahomes era has actually been, and I know that this is going to come rich from Kansas City, but I trust you. I'm asking you, if for some reason you're listening to the show and you're part of this, like, delusion together that all seems to think the league is fixed for the Chiefs, it's actually been the opposite. They have been more likely to change a rule because of a different player than Kansas City to operate. So, for instance, the Chiefs submitted a rule after not getting a coin flip against Tom Brady. Tom Brady then won in overtime because the Chiefs never possessed the ball. They did not change the rule. The following year, Josh Allen had the same thing happen. He then asked for a rule change as an organization to which it was then applied. Josh Allen, and look, I'm not saying Patrick Mahomes never flopped. Josh Allen is notorious
the king of
for
flopping.
Being one of the most egregious floppers in the NFL. They don't want any rule changes. Now the rest of the NFL is like, ban it! Fine him! This is crazy. We can't live like
this.
Because
Josh Allen doesn't
because
win,
because we saw
though.
Patrick Mahomes
exactly
do
that. And that's
it's all that, about the winning.
That is all it is. And this is not the first time in sports it's happened. A winning team, people come up with reasons. But it is, maybe it's just social media in 2024, 2025. But it has reached an unbelievable. I don't know if I've seen, I know certainly since you and I were been doing the show, even during this run with the Chiefs, that it's reached this level of not just hate, but like conspiracy that it's all rigged kind of stuff. There are numbers. The Chiefs, for example, seventh worst penalty yards differential since 2018 in the fourth quarter in overtime when
he's
games
like
are decided
average
by a score.
Getting he's league average at getting personal fouls of roughing the passer.
Yeah, it's just crazy. It's nuts. It's definitely, you know, we can call it Chiefs derangement syndrome, whatever you want to call it. That's exactly what's happened. And I feel like, I'll be honest, what drives me more crazy about it is I feel like I've been pretty fair with the ref criticism. What I mean by that is a year ago, I got criticized by some of you guys when we were discussing the Kadarius Toney stuff. And last year when, of course, the offsides call happens and Mahomes was for the first time in his career publicly critical of an official and everybody trashed him. But then also, I think you and I disagreed on it, the Toney thing. And you're like, yeah, they don't call. And I'm like, I hated how people in Kansas City blame the officials on the Kadarius Toney crap. I was like, no, be accountable. Kadarius Toney.
Oh, no, I didn't have a problem with calling penalty.
Line up on sides.
Yeah. I just think cool plays you get to stand.
But people were blaming refs on the Kadarius Toney offsides. People were blaming refs on the Juwan Taylor stuff and all of that. Like, they're at some point, like, just be better, make the adjustment. And yeah. I there's nothing more loser than complaining about officials 24/7. Like, we've all done it in our life, but not to the point of conspiracy theory. And that's where it's crossed the line here for me. Not just that you think it's a bad call, Mahomes shouldn't have been flagged or whatever. It's that you actually think, as a grown adult, it's okay if you're like your 8-year-old and 9-year-old kid thinks it's everything, you know, something is against them. Like, oh, my friend cheated, or the, you know, Rob Collins had a great point. He's like, it reminds you of like somebody that cheated. They think the video game system is against them or something, but they're 9 years old, not a 40-year-old grown ass man in Houston, Texas, that thinks that the league got together to ensure that the Chiefs got favorable calls. It's stupid.
I was honestly shocked at the sheer number of people on board with this. National media,
Troy Aikman,
like the entire
that
broadcast
hasn't helped. That
crew.
Hasn't helped.
No, the broadcaster, Troy Aikman was, and look,
he was not happy.
Troy Aikman, you know, once tried to send off one snarky tweet to our Joshua Briscoe about the number of Super Bowl rings he had to compare to Patrick Mahomes.
Did he really?
Oh, dude, there was a whole thing. He once reacted on Twitter because they said Patrick Mahomes has 46% or whatever the number was of the career touchdowns of Troy Aikman in 8% of the games. And he said, talk to me when he's got 33%. That's what it was. 30. Talk to me when he's got 33% of the rings.
Well,
he obviously now has 100% of the rings. And at the end of this year, very well could have 125%. So
you're saying this is why he has a little bit of a grudge against
him. I'm sure Troy Aikman wish he existed in a league that protected quarterbacks. And I saw part of this was the side part of this was that it wasn't about Mahomes. And the people who were trying not to be like a conspiracy theorist, but being like, it's gone too far in the protection of quarterbacks. And to what I would say to you is that's business. They pay these players $500 million if you're an NFL owner. They are going to do whatever they can to protect the life of it. They used to let quarterbacks get hit in the knee. And then Tom Brady's knee got ruined by Bernard Pollard. And they said, no. No more of that. You can't be going low on quarterbacks anymore. We're not allowing that. They make rules to support quarterbacks. That's how the league works. And I got nothing against that. They make the game more interesting. Because you mentioned snow football. I don't want to watch a bunch of games where Josh McCown is starting because the starting quarterback's out. I like them to play in the games. It makes the league more interesting, it turns out. So I have no problem with them keeping quarterbacks healthy, I guess, is the problem.
I do think there is a part, and you, if you want to include me in this group, I guess you can. I'm not going to tell you whether I'm a part of this group or not. That when the NFL doesn't exist anymore and we're long and gone, that information comes out of, hey, the NFL actually was with the Chiefs in this, and they wanted them to do this. I think there's people who want that to happen because they want something to come out of it because they're hating on them. Like, whether it be the Patriots fans or you can talk about any other fan base or the national media, they want something to come out eventually. Maybe not now, but after the dynasty's gone. Hey, by the way, there was something there.
I think
it's what people want. That's what they want.
It's a shared delusion. Like, if you belong to a cult.
Yeah, but like, honestly, during the Patriots run, there was some conspiracies. Some of them were warranted because they actually got caught cheating. But now, whether it's social media or other things, I do think it's just more than ever, man. Like, I look outside and the sky's blue and you're like, no, it's not. I'm like, no, like, literally there's scientific evidence to show you, not only with your eyes, but like, it's blue. And like, but no, I believe it. And then like, you just run with it. And now you have and it's way easier for you to just have an opinion on social media that goes across the board for everything nowadays. And it's nuts stuff, man. It really is. And it shouldn't drive me as crazy. I've just had enough with it. This is not like the idea of the Chiefsgate call is not a new concept. It took a whole other level this weekend when all of a sudden people, pundits, and legit media members, I would say, across the country decided to go
just
with this.
Just wait until something happens
this
weekend.
It's crazy.
Just wait until it happens this weekend.
Sure. There'll be missed calls this weekend. That's how it works.
I know, but I'm just saying it. There's going to be something that comes up where people are going to freak out.
Are we going to have the same energy?
To be that way.
You know, here's the difference it'll be like this weekend because like it's just a law of averages thing. There'll be a couple of bad calls to go in favor of the Bills, but the Chiefs will still find some way to win. And they'll be like, see, you can overcome it. Because that's the whole point, is that sometimes bad calls go against you. It's are you a good enough team to overcome when they work against you? For instance, on the drive that they eventually got on Patrick Mahomes, what I thought was the only wrong call of the game, where the two Texans defenders clapped helmets together and they got 15 free yards. They called a hold on Trey Smith on that same drive.
It was not a hold.
It's egregious. He got pulled down by the defender. It was not a hold. It didn't stop the Chiefs from going down and scoring points, did it? No, they just went down and eventually scored. They just, whatever comes their way, the bad penalties, the good penalties, when they were picking on Jawan Taylor for a month straight. I'm not saying you can't complain that refs are bad at their job. We all agree
The refs stink.
That refs are bad at their job on purpose, specifically to go against your team that I'm against.
How many times do we see Josh Allen turn to the ref and just throw his hands up on a...
Yeah, he had a lot.
On Sunday.
He's definitely that. I mean, that's...
I think it happens on a regular basis.
That's every quarterback says that. They're trying to get the call.
That's crazy.
Josh Allen is like he's the poster child.
A higher level. I don't disagree with that. It's definitely more than the other. It was a lot, man. It was a lot to take in this weekend. It was hard to look at. Meanwhile, they actually get the Bills, a real matchup between, I think, probably the two best teams in the AFC over the last 5 or 6 years, pretty obviously. The Bills get to their second AFC championship game. This will be their second chance to take care of the Chiefs in this one. And my initial thought is like, oh man, Bills are going to get one of these eventually, right? And then part of me is just like, their whole franchise suggests they lose this game. And the Chiefs have a chance to put the Bills so far under their thumb in the sense that Patrick Mahomes could eliminate Josh Allen from the playoffs four of the last five times he's been in it. How do you recover mentally if they just keep sticking your head under the water so you can't breathe? And that's what it feels like is on the line for this game for the Bills. Just permanent, like it's just over. Like, I don't care if you face them any time in the playoffs. Are you ever going to get past them? Beat them in as many regular season games as you want.
Yeah, who cares? Don't care about the regular season.
The Bills looked good enough. They mostly capitalized on the mistakes by the Ravens, but that's what good teams do. I didn't think they were like, ooh, so impressive. Look at the unstoppable Bills. But they won. They beat a very good team in Baltimore at home, but now they got to go on the road to Kansas City. So I start to feel good again because Kansas City has beaten Buffalo a lot. And the time they lost this year was in Buffalo.
Right. And we'll later on in the week talk about some of the differences. I think the personnel-wise, there's some major differences from the Week 11 matchup when Kansas City lost by 9 points. Most notably on the defensive side, Jalen Watson, Charles Omenihu were not in that football game. I think Bills fans would tell you, hey, we didn't have Dalton Kincaid or Keon Coleman, which is a fair point as well. So there's some serious differences. I think the Chiefs are just playing better football at this point than they were in Week 11 when the defense was not near this level. So I'm excited for the match. I think we all are, right? This is ultimately, when we go back to training camp in August and we're talking about the team and the three-peat quest and all that, ultimately, this is the weekend when it really counts, because the divisional round, Mahomes is now 7-0 in the divisional
round. Yeah, I don't take that round serious anymore. It's just a
AFC title game. They've lost in this game before. The Bills in the regular season have shown they can beat them. And even in the games that the Chiefs have beat the Bills in the playoffs, Josh Allen's played great. And it's been nail biters. There was the one playoff game where the Chiefs won by a pretty comfortable margin. The first one, if I'm not mistaken.
Early.
But recently, these have been nail biters. We pulled up the stats. If we include the regular season, the last 10 matchups, they have been dead even. Like, literally, points scored, both teams dead even.
Both teams 5-5.
Yeah. Now, in the playoffs, as you said, it's been different.
Very much so.
It's been different for them. And, like, I don't know. Like, we'll have Mike Shope on later in the week. Confidence. I don't know if as a Bills fan, I don't know how you could be confident in your team. I'm not saying you should think your team's going to lose, but sure. I don't know how you could be confident if you're a Bills fan knowing the history that's happened in this.
Here are the three games Josh Allen has played against Kansas City in the postseason. The first one in his second year in the league, so still an incredibly young player or as a starter. He lost to Kansas City 38-24. He went 28-48, 287, two touchdowns and a pick.
Mm-hmm.
And he got sacked five times, so like it wasn't a very good effort. That was the one you were talking about. The next one was the 2022 42-36 game for Kansas City, in which he went 329 yards, four touchdowns, no picks, and they still lost. And then, of course, last year, and that was the 13-second game at Arrowhead. That was the last time they faced an Arrowhead in the playoffs. And then last year against Kansas City, a 27-24 win, another incredibly close game, 186 yards, one touchdown, no picks, and then he ran for quite a bit in addition to that. So he 12 carries for 72 yards and two touchdowns, to be exact, not just quite a bit. He had a lot of yardage. If you're like, well, 186 in the air. No, there's 72 on the ground and a couple more scores. So three total scores, almost 300 total yards, and no turnovers. And so in the last two games, he's brought it. Josh Allen has brought it. He's brought his A game to those.
I expect that'll be the case Sunday night.
I do, too.
And that's why
Mahomes is going to have his best game.
Mahomes will have to elevate himself. Clearly the two turnovers that happened in Week 11, that happens again. They're probably not winning this football game. The Bills are probably saying the same thing. If they have two turnovers, they're probably not winning it. I mean, the margins are very, very thin. We're talking about an AFC title game. But again, this go-around, last year I still think was the best chance for the Bills to get them. You know, it was in their building, and I know it wasn't the AFC title game. That was a divisional round game, but that was the best chance. The Chiefs offensively were still struggling, and they had to go on the road throughout. Now you're back at Arrowhead, and it's like you don't get many opportunities to win in your own building in an AFC title game. The Chiefs have made it seem like it's an easy thing. They've got six of these seven at Arrowhead, but you just don't know. Like, we all assume Josh Allen and Mahomes will play in another four of these against each other, but There's new quarterbacks coming to the league all the time. And if you're Josh Allen, like, once again, this seems like your chance to get it done.
You and I are both on this as a 50-50 game. We'll make our predictions later in the week, obviously, coin flip. Drew, I'll say in our group chat after the game, you of all people seemed oddly confident that this was like a really, really, really good matchup for Kansas City.
Made me think he was emotionally hedging or something.
I don't know. Like, explain your reason behind it. Because, like, in our group chat, you were like, Chiefs are going to the Super Bowl. This ends up looking great. Like, you felt very good after the game finished up for Buffalo.
Because I felt like, and maybe it was just the immediate reaction to watching Baltimore play, but the way that they played, I know that Josh Allen didn't have to be better than what he was, but he wasn't particularly great. I know that that's not going to be the conversation from this because, hell, they're in the AFC title game. It doesn't matter. But if they tie the game up and Josh Allen doesn't go down in 90 seconds and they lose the game, the conversation, I think, would have been Josh Allen did nothing in that game. It seemed like the Ravens lost the game more than the Bills won the game. And to me, I thought that just the way that they had been playing to finish the season, and I know, Cody, we had brought up before the opponents that the Ravens had gone through, still being first in every single category from a total passing yards allowed, passing efficiency, all that stuff, from being almost dead last in week 11 when they moved Hamilton up to high safety, I thought it was enough to really make a difference. Maybe, I don't know, in how they even affected the Bills and how they did things. It just...
Bills just didn't have to work that hard on offense. The Ravens kept giving them the ball.
The Bills, it took the Ravens turning the ball over multiple times and a drop for the two-point conversion for them to win that game, where the Chiefs are not going to make those mistakes. We know that because we've seen it time and time again, just as you guys have said, going into the Houston Texans game. The Chiefs don't make those mistakes. That's why I think they should feel good about it, because in that game that they lost to Buffalo, Philly Buffalo played about as good as they could have. Chiefs didn't have certain players. Bills didn't either. But also, Mahomes struggled in that game. Not one of his best games. The last one, he turned the ball over. So,
playing way different football.
I felt more confident, I guess. If you're a Chiefs fan, I would feel better facing the Bills, given how they looked in that game against Baltimore, because you know that the Chiefs are better than Baltimore.
And maybe, you know, if Baltimore had won that game, you'd be like, well, they got their dud out of the way with the turnover department, because they were just frivolous with the ball, obviously, in that game. But that's also why you and I wanted it. They're just more prone to have a dud of a game.
Lamar and that team is more likely to make mistakes, in my opinion, and it sounds like you too, than Buffalo. And that's why, like, you know, the idea of, you know, winning by a certain margin or whatever, like, I think either way it's an AFC title game. The chances of any team winning by a wide margin are pretty slim. But I think typically, it's less likely against a team like Buffalo, because their quarterback, to me, is going to play at an extremely high level and not make mistakes. Now, the payoff here, though, is if you get Josh Allen to make one of those mistakes,
one of those old school Josh Allen regular season mistakes,
then it's not only game on, but it's big trouble for the Buffalo Bills at that point.
Same thing applies to Kansas City, which doesn't apply to any other team. And this is the normal, which is nice for the Chiefs. This is why they win so much, is that if they make mistakes, they got a better chance of winning in spite of those. Versus like every other team in the league, it's like if they start making those mistakes, overcoming it is nearly impossible. Chiefs had a lot of games with a negative turnover differential for the first half of the regular season this year, of which they were undefeated.
The one that got them
in the mistake department was Buffalo.
Was Buffalo, absolutely. And they gave up 30 points, and there was the crucial fourth down conversion by Josh Allen. That's where I think the defense is we're going to talk about this in the next segment. Let's talk about the defensive 8-sack performance. But in general, this defense is way better now than what it was back in week 11. How did they come up with 8 sacks yesterday? Plus, Jay Binkley going to join us, talk Chiefs, and it's a national title game tonight with Ohio State and Notre Dame.